You're listening to Skills in Transformation, a podcast where I interview experts and professionals to help you uncover the challenges, opportunities, and best practices building digital skills. My name is Frank Højgaard, CEO at Readiness, and on a mission to make digital skills work. Welcome. Hi, and a very warm welcome to this first episode in our Skills in Transformation podcast series. Very excited to kick it off here at SimCorp, one of the world's leading providers of investment management solutions. And a very special welcome to my guest today, Ken Koops, Enterprise Learning Architect here at SimCorp. Good to see you and thanks for joining us, Ken.
Thank you, Frank. It's good to be here.
Good. We will be talking about the cloud transformation that SimCorp is going through and how it has impacted the requirement for and approach to digital skills here at SimCorp. But before doing that, and even before letting Ken introduce himself, I would just like to take a few minutes to talk about this podcast series in general, since this is our first episode. So the purpose of the podcast is really to help our listeners make digital skills work in their organizations. Digital transformation, and hence digital skills, are becoming more and more important for people, for organizations, and for our society. Digital skills are in high demand. We have more demand than we have supply. And the best practice models for how you build digital skills at scale in an organization are still relatively limited. And we would like to change that, get people involved in the discussion, creating a community where we facilitate sharing of valuable information and experiences that ultimately give you, our listener, the best tools to navigate this territory in the best possible way. You can even join the conversation with specific questions to our guests or more general questions you would like us to explore in an episode. Could be a challenge you're facing, or maybe you even want to suggest an exciting guest for an episode. You do that by contacting us on podcast@readiness.com or through our website readiness.com/podcast, and that was readiness.com/podcast. So, if you're interested in digital skills in any way, join our conversation with the experts. Now, back to you, Ken. As mentioned, you're Enterprise Learning Architect here at SimCorp. Couldn't you start by introducing yourself, a little bit about your role, and also give our listeners an introduction to SimCorp?
Well, I can try, certainly. If we start with the easy part, which is my role. As you mentioned, I'm the Enterprise Learning Architect, and that's a bit of a new role. That's not something that many people have as their job title, and that's probably because it's something that we invented ourselves. If you translate it, then what it means, roughly, it means that I'm head of learning and development, but it is in a vastly different framework than anywhere else, because what we tried to do was basically reinvent the way that we structure and organize ourselves around learning and development. You mentioned scale in your introduction, and one of the key things is, how do you scale a learning organization? And I think it's around 5 years ago now, we went through what we called an agile transformation, where we went from a traditional waterfall model and we basically bought into agile, the scaled agile framework, SAFe in particular. And once we'd done that, we basically blew up the entire organization. We had an entirely new organization come out on the other side of that. And the way we'd organized around learning was, prior to that, it looked like what you would find in a normal, you know, project management textbook. There were various academies. Each academy had an executive sponsor. There was a principal for each academy, which was basically the project manager. And then you had a steering committee or advisory board for each of them. And then what we found was that when we came out on the other side of our agile transformation, none of the people that we sort of depended on for these academies were in the same place that we expected them to be. So in any case, we would have to basically rebuild from scratch. But what we thought, instead of doing that, let's try to take the stuff that we learned on our agile journey and see how can we apply that in creating a learning organization that actually works, that actually becomes more than just a PowerPoint slide. And we did that by basically reorganizing the entire way we approached this. So instead of having a centralized learning function, we pushed it into the business, into the organization. We invented a new role. We call it the learning owner. I think most will be familiar with the product owner. And a learning owner is basically for learning what a product owner is for the product. So they're responsible for a specific slice of our learning, and they drive that. They're responsible for making sure that we have a curriculum. They're responsible for making sure that the learning is in the quality and relevant and all the things that you would expect. And we've not said this is a dedicated role. We said this is something that goes on top of the existing roles that we have. And that basically has allowed us to scale. So today we have, I think we have around 25 learning owners. We have 14 learning areas. So this is basically the way we've sliced up our strategy and said this is what we absolutely need to know. And each learning area then has one or more learning owners who are responsible for driving it. And as the enterprise learning architect, I'm the head cheerleader for all of this because the learning owners are the ones who do all the heavy lifting in this. My job is to help them as much as I can. I am basically a coach. I try to make sure that we are on the right path, that we're going in the same direction, all these things. But most of my job is being a coach. It is being the head cheerleader for this amazing team that we have. And it's worked really well. So we have, in the part of the organization that I represent, which is our product development and R&D, which is, you know, ballpark 800 people, I'm the only one in a dedicated learning role. And yet we've managed to deliver what I would, and obviously I'm hugely biased in this, but I would say a really, really good learning product for our people.
So if I understand it right, so besides sort of, let me use the term traditional HR support in the business, you're using people in the organization, existing subject matter experts that works in the business with the technology as head of the learning part of this.
Yes, exactly. So we have a specific role in SimCorp called the development manager. And the development manager is basically our people manager, guiding our people, leading them, making sure that that they have all the stuff that they need. So the learning owner was sort of a natural addition to that role. So a big part of our learning owners are development managers, but it's not exclusive to them. So we also have some of our architects and other roles who are stepping into this. So basically the people who are closest, because even if our development managers are not necessarily developers themselves, in the software sense at least, they're very, very close to the people who need the learning. That means that they know exactly what's going on. And I'd much rather have someone who knows what the business needs than I would have someone who knows all the intricacies of learning, who's a learning expert, if you will. Mm. That part we can source, if I'm being brutally honest. But what we cannot source is understanding our business and making sure that we actually deliver the right kind of learning to our people. So, yes, that it is part of that. That is simply putting it as close to the people who depend on learning as possible.
Okay. One of the interesting things with the SimCorp in relation to digital skills, I think, is that where for many other organizations, digital skills is not sort of what they've done in the past. For you, it's digital skills first. That's where you come from. Without digital skills, you wouldn't have a business since you are a digital software business. But I also know that you are going through a transformation from a technology point of view that has impacted, are still impacting, I guess, the way you, or at least the skills you need, not necessarily the way you acquire them, but the skills you need. Can you talk briefly about that transformation, that whole cloud transformation, what you're trying to achieve?
Absolutely. I mean, transformations are just a new normal, I think, first of all. The frequency by which we sort of fundamentally change is increasing, and it'll continue to increase. And we've certainly had our share of those. I mentioned the agile transformation already. I think that's a really good example of something that is an ongoing transformation. It's not something that all of a sudden you just draw a line in the sand and say, now we're done with agile. That's a continuous transformation that happens every day, even now, 5 years into it. Mm-hmm. The second big transformation that SimCorp is going through is that we're moving from being a software company into being a services company. So instead of just creating the software that our clients depend on, we're looking at the entire delivery, we're looking at services processes, so software as a service, business processes as a service, all these kind of things sort of fold into everything as a service for us. And that's one of the huge business transformations that we're looking into. And part of that, as you rightly say, is our cloud transformation, where we're taking our product and placing it into the cloud. And obviously, that requires a new skill set from a digital perspective. And what we did was we basically followed the model that I sort of briefly introduced you to before, where we said, if cloud is important for us, and it obviously is, then it should also be a learning area, because then we make sure that we have dedicated people who look at it. So cloud technology is one of our learning areas today. And we have two brilliant learning owners for it who engage with the business. They engage with our architect community, for instance, figure out what is it that we need to do, figure out, just a random example here, that Azure is a big technology that we need to master. Good. Then let's look at how we do that. And these guys then basically go out into the world and they figure out how we're going to do that and provide the curriculum for it. We look at, so what are the spin-offs of that? So if we're going to the cloud, for instance, security, software security becomes a huge issue for us. There's a big difference between being in the cloud and then basically, you know, burning a CD-ROM and giving it to your clients.
Your responsibility exactly, to your customer.
Exactly. And SimCorp is not exactly a startup company. We celebrated our 50th anniversary last year. So we have a bit of baggage when it comes to how we create software. So there's lots of things that we need to learn, but there's also some stuff that we need to unlearn in this cloud journey. Specifically when it comes to security, that's one of the things that we're looking at, is making sure that we have not just the skills to create a safe product, which is important in itself, but also that we have the mindset of it's a dangerous world out there. So both of those, so both software security and cloud technology are independent learning areas for us, with people who every day come to work and they look at what can we do to become better in this space. Again, now I come back to sort of the process part of this. Whenever they have an idea for something to do, I think most people will recognize, so I have an idea. How do I get, usually ideas, they tend to cost money somehow. How do I get money for this? And one of the key things we did was that instead of having our L&D budget sort of distributed on, I think we had, when we did this originally, I think we had 77 individual cost centers for learning and development. And you can imagine if you want to go out and you want to do something for the entire organization, then basically either you have to go to the very top and get a budget for it, or you have to go hand in hand to 100 different people and say, do you think you want to contribute to this? And that makes it a very, very difficult process for it. So what we did was we said, okay, instead of spreading our budget out, we're going to have one budget for learning and development. So that is how it is today. There is only one budget.
Mm-hmm. All centralized.
And that, so it sounds very centralized. It is, in fact, the polar opposite of centralized, because what happens is, I'm, as the enterprise learning architect, I sort of formally own the budget. My only job in the world is to push this money out where it makes the most sense, where it does the most good in the organization. So whenever someone comes and says, we have this idea, all right, fantastic, let's do it. And I mean, if it's a huge investment, then we take the sort of the next level in our organizational structures. We call it the learning guild, where all the learning owners are collected. So let's say we wanted to spend something with a lot of zeros behind it, then we put it to a vote in the learning guild and say, does this make sense for us? Is this where we should be spending our money? And we can do that in days, usually. So our decision-making processes are very, very quick in terms of getting from an idea, something that we think we need to do, validating it, and then basically getting the funding to execute on it. And all of that, I mean, that's general for everything, but certainly for the cloud area and for security as well. That's how it works. These guys come with whatever they need, and we usually just do it.
So you've really tried to take some of the bureaucracy out of the process. That's what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay, cool. In terms of the skills for this cloud transformation, and in terms of sort of timing, I realized that you need new skills. Security or more skills, cloud, etc. But did you also have to change the way you approached digital skills, or was it already such a big part of your DNA and you had the model in place at that point in time, so all you had to do was basically to include new subject matter areas?
We didn't change anything in terms of our basic model or approach. we put the new areas in place, and we look at it every 3 months and say, are these still the 14 learning areas we should have? Should we retire something? Because it is either not important or something is more important. There is a finite amount of hours in the day, and that's a big part of what we do as well, is to just say, we're not just going to build, because if we just put something on top of everything else, then we would have 50 learning areas. And that might look good on a slide, and you can say, well, we have that here. It doesn't work in practice because you don't have the resources or the bandwidth to actually address it. So we're very fastidious about when we create something new, we also look at what do we then need to not do. And that's always the balancing act. And that's what the Learning Guild does, basically. It is to balance these competing views. Long story short, we didn't change anything in terms of our processes. We talked about sort of various transformations in the beginning of this. And I think some transformations are deliberate. So our cloud transformation obviously is deliberate and moving to a services company. That's a strategic decision that we now need to execute on. But not all transformations are deliberate. And I think when it comes to digital, one of the things that has impacted us, and I think also the rest of the world, was COVID-19.
For sure.
Because it put us in a situation where all of a sudden we had to not invent new skills, but we certainly had to deploy some muscles that we hadn't used to that extent before. And I think that had a huge impact on how we view digital. Maybe I'm sort of an eternal optimist here, but I don't think COVID is going to be sort of a global game changer, but I think it's going to be an accelerator for some things that were already going to happen. And one of those things is digital learning. The way we deploy our learning, the way we execute learning activities, has fundamentally changed over the past 3 years already, 2 years, two and a half years,
24 months.
And I think it has highlighted some areas where we were, I want to be diplomatic, I don't want to say weak, but some areas where we could do with a little more training if we stay on topic. So basically, I think this was in February 2020, when the first lockdowns in Denmark at least came, what we basically did was we canceled every classroom we had. And then over the next month, we figured out, okay, this is not going away. How do we do this in a virtual setting? And we were lucky in that we had the infrastructure ready to go. We had basically everything that was needed for us to do it. So we had the infrastructure, but there's such a huge difference between being a good teacher in a classroom and doing it virtually, sitting in a Teams meeting. So that is something that I think we're still looking into, is how do we actually provide the kind of skills to be a success in the digital world? It's not just learning. I mean, every kind of presentation you do is going to be different if you do it in a Teams or Zoom or whatever kind of environment you're doing it in. And you can't depend on if you're sort of an old guy like I am, can't depend on the same tricks that you would do if you're standing in a room and you can make eye contact with people and you can move around and you can do all the kind of stuff that you would usually do. I tend to tell people they have to see every presentation to do it. It's like, imagine that people are sitting on a couch and they're watching television and they have the remote control in their hand. That's where you are. And if you do not keep them interested every second of your presentation, they will flip the switch and they will find another channel. They might not leave the meeting, but they'll turn off their camera and they'll start doing mails, all the kind of stuff that you're not, well, unless you are completely rude, then you don't do in a classroom, at least. So yeah, basically getting to terms with this whole new environment is still something that we're working on. I don't think it's something that we, as not just as SimCorp, but as the world, we've successfully cracked yet, understanding how this works.
Do you have any data at this point in time that looks at sort of delegate satisfaction from a physical classroom versus the virtual online?
We have our usual happy sheet analysis. That has actually not, there hasn't been any significant changes to that. But for me, it's not a particularly good data point because I don't believe it. I think there has been a difference in it that doesn't reflect the survey results, because there's so many things. I still, when I audit courses, there's still so many people who basically take what they would have done in a classroom and they transfer it one-to-one into a digital setting. And in my book, at least, that doesn't work. You don't get the kind of engagement. And you can also look at just the discipline. So sometimes I just drop in on, if we have a Teams-based course, I just drop in. And there are so many, let's say there's 20 people or 15 people on a course. if two-thirds of them, well, no, the other way around, if one-third of them have their camera on, then you're in good shape. Mm-hmm. It's a small thing, and there's a bandwidth, and there's lots of stuff that goes into it. I'm sure you've tried this. If you've ever had a meeting where you're the only one with your camera off and you're basically looking into a blank screen, it is so dispiriting for the instructor. And it's a small thing, right? But it makes such a huge difference in terms of the experience you have. Are you sitting on your own learning, or are you part of a group learning? Has the instructor provided you with whatever kind of interactivity that goes into it? And I think that's part of the digital shift, is that we've been using e-learning as a society for what, 20, 25 years now. And we've gotten kind of sort of good at building in interactivity into that, building engagement into it, making sure that you don't speak for 30 minutes without a break, all these things. That's still something we need to understand, that some of the same mechanisms will be, well, not only will be, but apply in the virtual classroom. Mm-hmm.
It's a good point. I know from some of our instructors, just to add to your point, that when this whole thing started, some of them went, did a class for 8 hours, and they went straight to the couch and slept because they were looking into it as just a black screen. They couldn't have eye contact. It was so draining for them. So it is really a very, very different setting, not the least for the instructors.
It is so difficult for the instructor. Mm. I think to begin with, we actually said you need to be two people to do this, because you need, the instructor needs to be on. Now you are. Mm. You're performing, you're in front of the camera, you have to mind all the kind of stuff, and you have to be, because it basically being in front of a camera amplifies everything about you, your tone, your body language. Everything gets amplified when you have it in that setting. It is far less forgiving than being in a classroom. Mm. And then you have all this other stuff going on. You have a chat function that's moving. You have, then now I need to do a breakout room. Mm. And the technology is new. And sometimes technology tends not to work. And all these things. And that can really throw off an instructor. Mm.
Did you see all your training go back into the classroom, or will you still see a predominantly virtual version, but just adapt to it actually being virtual, so to speak?
I would like to keep it, to the extent possible, virtual, because assuming that we can crack all the stuff that we just talked about, then the benefits are just massive for it. We're around 2,000 people, and we have offices basically in all around the world. Mm. Just the logistics of getting people to Copenhagen, where we have our main training facilities, you spend more time on that than you spend actually making sure that the course is...
And a few bucks as well.
Quite a few bucks. environmental impact. I mean, you put a lot of people on airplanes doing that. Yeah. So there's a lot of benefits from it. The thing that you miss from it is obviously the social aspect of it. And I think that's a very, very interesting point. I don't know if you remember, but a while back there was a survey that said that, now I can't remember the numbers, but of the majority of the jobs that people who are in their early 20s have not been invented yet, the jobs that they will be in when they reach 30, 40 years. I think maybe we're going to get to a point, if this continues and we start to say virtual, then you're going to have a job like chief social officer. Because the interesting thing is, when you had a class, you have 15 people come to Copenhagen, they would be in one of our classrooms, they would do the class, and then usually people would go out afterwards. They would have a beer, they would go out, have dinner together. And those were unbelievably important events, right?
That part of it.
The networking that was created, the kind of connections that were created, by the camaraderie that is generated by being in a social setting with people. But it always came as sort of an appendage to, and I think learning was one of the big things that actually drove this, was you went on a course and then you met some people and you expanded your network and you made new friends, or at least you got to know your colleagues better. That's something that's missing today. And that's something that cannot be replaced in a virtual setting. And I think maybe we need to come to a realization that the social aspect is not an appendage to, for instance, the learning sphere. Because, I mean, learning is sort of the constant that goes through everything. Otherwise, you meet for kickoff or a strategy presentation or something like that. That's once a year, every half year, or whatever. And when that is missing, then you take something important out of a company. And I think you have an incredibly strong culture. The social aspect of working in SimCorp is fantastic. All of a sudden, if you take that away, you take something that is absolutely core.
Part of the DNA.
It is part of the DNA, exactly. And you take that out of the equation. So I actually think that as we move forward with this social aspect, and this won't be folded into learning, but I think it is something as a business you need to be much more aware of. You have to work with it in a much more deliberate manner than what you've been used to, because the key part where it sort of was gifted to you as part of something else, if that doesn't exist, then you have to spend some time doing it. And then perhaps we actually need to say, it's okay. There isn't really a business purpose in gathering you for this. We're gathering you because it's important. It's important that you get to know each other. And that's a profession in itself.
Exactly. One of the things we often hear from organizations going through sort of transformations like your cloud project, that one of the biggest challenges they have is the timing of it, in the sense that you have a business that is moving from A to B, whatever that means, could be from the basement to the cloud, sort of literally speaking, a little bit like you. And to do that, they need certain skills at a certain point in time. And how do you sort of get that timing right? And I guess what we often hear is that skills has become part of the discussions too late in the day. So you have a project, it's big, it's important. You maybe have external consultants to help you sort of get it off the ground, etc. And that actually means that you don't get the other part right from the beginning, or you don't get it included early in the project. So where the digital skills specifically, so the security, the cloud, become part of your discussions of the cloud project? Was that very early on, or did it came later? Can you sort of elaborate on that?
Yeah, but I think you're absolutely right. I mean, learning has learning tends to be either 5 to 12 or 5 past 12. So either it is something you do just before you absolutely need them because no one thought about it, or it's something that you forget about and then you actually do it before, sorry, after you... it was needed. And again, I comes back to the process we have around this. So when you have learning owners that are basically not just embedded, but they are part of the business and they are responsible for this, they are measured on it and they're rewarded for it, then you take that out of the of this equation, because then it just happens. The problem with learning and what usually happens is that the project seems... it's not on their radar. It is part, it's usually part of the scope of a project, but it's not necessarily the part of the charter that gets the most airtime when you have a review or whatever there is. And then all of a sudden you've, oh, damn it, we need to get this done. And then you call vendor or whatever and you get it done. It has to be part of the discussion from a very early stage. And that requires that the people who are responsible for it both have the mandate and the will to do it, and that they are in the right settings for it. And that's part of what we do in our setup, is we talk more about stakeholders in this setup than I've ever talked before, because that is basically the key to that, is that the learning owners know who are their stakeholders. Finding out who is it that I need to not only know, but I need to be inside their head so that I know what it is they're thinking, so that I can actually support them.
Understand their requirements.
Exactly. And when that works, then this is a non-issue. Then it just happens. Then everything flows, and we move away from this. Oh,
we forgot this.
We forgot. That was something we needed to do. Yeah. And it becomes part of the conversation. And you can then use it, by the way, which is actually quite interesting. So we've now built quite a big setup around this, with portals and different things that people can go into. And all of a sudden you have a support mechanism where you take learning and you basically not just provide the skills, but you also use it in the basic awareness and making sure that people know what's going on. Because I think the learning organization communicates, because that's something we encourage them to do, far more than what a normal project would do. So all of a sudden you're in a positive cycle where not only do you get the skills that you need when you need them, you get the right skills because it's actually something that someone has had a conversation about. It's not just in time learning where, oh, we need this and I need to basically just check this. So there's a little e-learning course over there. Let's throw that out there. No, it's the right kind of learning, the kind of learning that supports whatever it is we're trying to do. In this case, cloud is figuring out what's the new palette of tools we need. So we need Asia for sure. we need new ways of looking at how we develop in C#. We need to containerize some of our legacy code. All these things become part of a bigger picture, right? So if that had not been part of the discussion early on, just the scope of it would have made it impossible.
But what you're saying is also that it ensures that learning is not just happening because somebody wants to take a course, but because everything builds up to the overall objective and of the organization, which is achieve this and this and this, that things becomes much more, what's the right English term here? They fit together, support each other.
That's the idea, certainly.
Yeah.
We have another part, because the learning areas, what they will focus on, what the cloud technology learning area will focus on, it is what we just talked about. They will look at what is it we want to achieve. They'll make sure we have the skills for that in the right quality at the right time. And as I said, we have 14 of these learning areas. It's a fairly finely meshed net that we created. There isn't part of our strategy where I said that's not covered. It should be a net. It shouldn't be a plank for whatever, something solid is. There will always be individual needs that require individual solutions. So even though our guys will sit down and they will create a really, really, really good curriculum for cloud skills in this case, there will always be an employee with a unique challenge that needs to be solved within this. And the interesting thing is then how do you solve that? How do you allow for individuality in a system as I just described? Because what I've just described, you don't have to think that much about it. You can basically just go in, plug into whatever learning path you want to follow, and everything will be fine. But it doesn't work for everyone. So we need one more aspect, and we call it our learning quest system. And again, it sort of comes back to the way we've structured it. So as part of our portal, there's a place where you can go in as an employee, and you can say, I want to go on this course. I need to know something very, very specific about how to code in Azure. I need a certificate for whatever reason it might be. So the way you do it is you go into this portal, you say, this is the course I want to go on. It costs so and so much money. This is the reason for me wanting to do it, and this is the date that it happens. And then your line manager basically gets a ping saying that you need to go approve this. And the guidance that is given to all line managers is, if this is even vaguely, remotely connected to our business and making us better, then the default answer is yes. It isn't a discussion, it's just yes. And it's one of the more interesting things when I talk to my colleagues and say, Jesus.
Open up the bank vault.
Yes. How do you manage that? And I think it's interesting because we don't. Transparency is the key here. So when you go in, you go to this portal, you write what it is. That is visible for all your colleagues. Now, if you're confident and comfortable enough writing it.
Sharing it.
Yeah, that's it. You don't need anything else. And that manages that entire situation. So we never have, obviously we've set aside money to fund it, but it runs with an absolute minimum of admin and bureaucracy. So you're able to do both. You have both the formalized path where you say there's a learning path that you need to follow. If you're going from 0 to 100 in Azure, you have absolutely no idea what Azure is and you need to get to a certain level. There is a fixed learning path for that. But all the small side roads that you can go down, we have those covered as well through this learning quest system. And it works, and I'm kind of amazed that that transparency alone can be such an effective tool in managing something that I don't think I've ever heard about anyone just throwing it up. And by the way, saying to your line managers, you have to have a really, really good reason to say no.
It's normally the other way around.
It's usually the other way around. So, yeah.
Really cool, good perspective, and I think a lot to learn for other organizations.
Know your skills.
I would like to bring in a little session here, activity called Know Your Skills, a little competition. We will have two recurring activities in all our podcast episodes. And the first one is the one coming now that we call Know Your Skills. We will ask all our guests 5 questions around digital skills to test their knowledge. And at the end of the season, there's a little prize for the one with the most correct answers. So I hope you're up for it. You get three options, so you're not sort of left all alone in the woods here. And it is just generic questions around digital skills. So question number one for you, Ken, is, according to a report carried out by the EU on a need for digital skills in Europe, how many professional careers, jobs require basic digital skills? Is it 85%, 90%, or 95%?
Of all jobs?
Of all jobs. So it's a big number no matter what. And it's basic digital skills. So, you know, we are talking office proficiency and stuff like that.
I was top on 95.
That's a bit too high. It's 90.
No, but that wasn't my answer. That was,
sorry.
The top one was 95.
Yes.
Okay.
And you were going to say 90.
I can say that now. Yeah, I was going to say 90.
Okay, sorry for that. I was too quick. Okay. Question, you get that. You get points for that.
Yay.
Question number two. How many jobs will require advanced digital skills by 2030? Is that 55%, 65%, or 75%? So I'm not saying we are talking necessarily Asia developer skills here, but it's definitely more than just proficiency in, you know, office and stuff like that.
Yeah. What was the middle one? 55 and what's the bottom?
65.
65.
75.
It has to be 75.
You're doing well. It's the right number. Question number three. According to World Economic Forum research, how many US dollar could closing the global skills gap add to the global GDP by 2028? And this is some very big numbers, no matter how you put it. 8.5 trillion US dollars, 10 trillion US dollars, or 11.5 trillion US dollars?
I have no idea is the short answer. So one in three. Let's go for the middle one.
The middle one. No, it's actually even more. It's 11.5 trillion US dollars. The final two questions is around the impact of machines, algorithms, and sort of AI and that stuff. So according to World Economic Forum research, how many new workplace roles can be generated on a global scale in 2022 as a result of machines and algorithms? Is it 113 million, 123 million, or 133 million? And it's jobs being created or generated.
123?
It's actually the biggest number, highest number. It's 133.
I think I found the algo for this question. Just take the highest number.
No, not always. Not always. Not always. And here comes then the other part of the stick, so to speak. Because the next question is, how many jobs will be displaced in 2022 as a direct result of machines and algorithms? 65 million, 75 million, or 85 million?
In 2022? So
yes.
This year?
Yes.
65.
It's 75.
75.
So that was three correct ones, I think?
Two.
Two? Was it two? Sorry, I was not following suit here. If you take the two last ones, this survey research actually predicts that there will be a positive.
That's a net gain, yeah.
Net gain. So more jobs can be created than will be displaced. I mean, there's a lot of talk about sort of the fear for what will these technologies do to jobs. Do you think actually it will, that you could believe that it will create more than it will displace?
I'm surprised that the spread is so high. Mm. I didn't know that. In all honesty, I would have said it would have been a net loss.
A net loss.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's also the future. We don't know, but...
But again, yeah. There's so many variables that go into to these kind of things. Mm. We've talked about COVID, right? Mm. Just imagine the kind of efficiency gains that will happen based on the fact that we are now able to work more digitally. Mm. There's probably a survey. I haven't seen that.
I'm sure there is.
And again, growth fosters jobs. Mm. I'm surprised that the spread is that big.
Back to your transformation. So one of the, whether it's digital or whatever transformation it is, an important part is change management. and getting the support of your employees and sort of getting their buy-in to say, yeah, we believe this is the right direction for our organization and we're actually willing to change in skills and all kinds of things. How did you approach that sort of as part of the specific cloud transformation to get people onboarded to that journey? I guess it has had a tremendous impact on a lot of people in the organization making that big move. As you said before, let's code some software, put it on a DVD and send it to our customers and say, now we want to provision this to you as a service through the cloud.
Absolutely. And I think all these, everything you talk about change, it begins by telling the story about why are we doing this? Mm. Why is it that status quo is no longer a viable option for us? And the better you're able to tell that story, the more crisp and concise and clear you're able to frame what it is we're doing and why we're doing it, the easier everything else becomes. And I think in our case, we've had a really good senior leadership team that has been able to tell a story about the journey that we're on. I mean, it's not just a new technology, right? It is an integral part of becoming a services company. If we want to become a services company, if we want to remain relevant in the future, we can't keep doing what we're doing. So it's not just a technology question. It is something that feeds into our entire business model and therefore also our entire raison d'etre, the reason for SimCorp being here, right? So that's the beginning of everything. We're sort of blessed in this transformation by having, we're a software company, we're a technology company. Yeah, we have engineers, and engineers are wonderful people because they tend to like to know new stuff.
Explore new technologies.
Explore new technology, yeah. Exactly.
Give them a playground.
Exactly. So it's not a question of really convincing them that they need to master new technology. In that sense, there isn't really that much cajoling needed to get our people to learn new stuff in this space. That's certainly not to say that that is the same for everything. I mentioned software security, and we spent a lot of time on that. So I'm going to use that as an example instead. Getting people to understand that it's a dangerous world out there, and it really is. Mm. That's something that takes a bit of doing, because you can tell the story, you can go through. We usually do some case studies. So we used NotPetya, the attack that that hit a couple of years ago. There was the SolarWinds Orions, one of the latest ones we did. And you can tell that story, and people will accept that the danger is real and also that we are a potential target for hackers and cyber criminals. But how do you then do it? Mm. And this is when you have to get really specific. Mm. And that's incredibly difficult, because when you have this vast group of people in different roles, it's kind of sort of easy to tell people, okay, don't share your password, don't write mails on the train or in the plane or somewhere where people can see your screen and all these kind of things. That's kind of easy. But if you're sitting as a software developer and you're coding in Asia or somewhere else, what is it that you have to be aware of? That kind of mindset is incredibly difficult to work with, even though people will accept that it is a risk for us. But if you cannot really spell out, I expect you to do A, B, C, D, then it becomes difficult. And that's basically what we're trying to do, is we're trying to tell people, we have to rely on you. We have to rely on your good judgment when you do something, and that's difficult. Mm. And that kind of change is still something that we're struggling with, to make sure that everyone, in whatever way they can, they work with security. Not just in the password area, but in the way everything is constructed. I mean, we're getting there, but it's been a journey. The point I'm trying to make with this is, when you cannot tell people explicitly what it is you want them to do, when you can sort of highlight, say, okay, there's a danger. We understand what the danger is, but exactly how it is you should mitigate and how you should fix it. When you can't do that, because it is going to be individual, it's going to be something that is unique for any given situation that happens every day. It's incredibly difficult.
And I can imagine that it's a topic that, should I say, big interest to your customers as well, given the nature of the customers you have and the type of data you sort of process for them, that they want to be certain that, you know, the service they receive from SimCorp is nailed.
It is a non-negotiable requirement. I mean, we have so many people who are working on this, making sure that we're certified, making sure that we get audited and we follow the right compliance frameworks and all these kind of things. This is one of the very few courses that I designed myself, and it is such a scary topic. When you realize the capabilities and also the fact that hackers are not sort of teenagers that are sitting in their parents' basement somewhere. These are very, very professional, and in many, many cases, they're government-sponsored with access to resources that will rival and even surpass that of a mid-sized multinational as SimCorp. It's a scary prospect, right? So, yeah.
Interesting.
But that's the entire point of it. The point is you will never be able to create this 100% process for security. It's kind of the nature of software is that there's always someplace you can do it. And the only way to be effective in protecting our software, our customers, is constant vigilance. It is every day we have to come to work, and every day we have to look at whatever we do and ask ourselves, is this secure?
And keep on pushing the employees to accept that those requirements from a security point of view is a big part of that.
But also the other way around, having the employees push leadership and say there is a hole here. And we have our backlog consists of 80 other things that will come before this. This has to be fixed. It has to both come from the top and from the bottom. Because if you tried, our CTO made a, I think, a really, really good point about this, is that our product is so big and so complex that if we try to centralize around this and made security a specific department, we would never release any software again, ever, because it would be the biggest bottleneck in the history of the world. So obviously, we need to combine these different approaches to it, where we have security experts that are working on it constantly, but it has to be combined with everyone taking responsibility for it, and no one saying, well, security is not my concern because we have a security department sitting somewhere in an ivory tower somewhere. They will handle this, so I will just ship this like it is. No, that is where you get into trouble. You have to have people say, is this safe? Am I confident about this? And they have to understand the consequences of what would happen if we ever get attacked.
Cool.
Scalebox. You got mail.
Let's jump to sort of our second recurring activity. We call it Skills Box, which is the opportunity for our listeners to get their questions answered. And as I mentioned in the introduction, remember to submit your questions to podcast@readiness.com or use our website readiness.com/podcast. This can be a specific question to a specific guest or a more generic question around digital skills. As this is our first podcast, we don't have a specific question for you, Ken, as such, but we have a more generic one we often hear, and that could sort of sum up a lot of the discussions today, which is really in your transformation. And here I'm thinking, obviously, the cloud transformation, but also you could say the transformation of learning and development at SimCorp in more general terms. What are sort of the best practices, the summary of the best practices that you would sort of emphasize to people?
That's a good question, right? So we talked about a lot of the things that I think are important, which is decentralize, find a way to decentralize, push learning as far into the business as you possibly can. I think that is the first thing. The second thing is, and this goes back to the whole premise of our conversation, which is digital learning, is the IT department is your best friend. We've been so lucky that we've had an IT department that was forward-looking, and when we needed stuff, it was there already. So IT departments, I don't know, maybe this is an old way that I've been brought up to look at it, but you went to IT if you wanted to have a new learning management system or something like that, and then you had a specific interaction with them. But it is everything. It is the entire infrastructure that you use. Everything we have can be used for learning.
So build a focused setup around it and ensure all the tools are there as well is a big part of it, as much as the process and the organization.
I would say, yeah.
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 Okay, cool.
Skillbox.
Thank you.
As I said initially, when we look at digital skills from a marketplace point of view, there's clearly much more demand than there are supply, which also means that there's a lot of sort of pull in people and in resources. So, I mean, you've already said a lot of great things you're doing to ensure you have the skills you need when you need them. But are there any other things in this war for talent that SimCorp is looking at to be able to complete your transformation?
Yeah. The first part of your question is basically, I mean, we're fighting every other company for talent right now. Mm. And I like to think that we have a world-class learning organization in place, which is nice. Mm. The thing that we need to do is to leverage everything we have when it comes to branding ourselves as a company. I think every company will do that. So what we do is we try to tell the story about, if you work here, then learning is not just something we pay, you know, lip service to. It is part of being a SimCorp, is that you are constantly learning, that you have wealth of opportunity for professional growth and development. But that only works if you're actually telling that story. Mm. It's not enough just to create the system. You also have to communicate that, and not just internally, because that's sort of preaching to the choir. Mm. But you need to deploy that when you're going out and you're trying to attract new people to join us. That has to be part of the conversation we have. And it's not just that. I mean, it is everything. That is the state of the labor market today. Every company needs to basically use every facet of their business to brand themselves mm. and to attract the right people. So that's something that we've just, from the learning and development area, we do quite a lot of, is trying to spread the word about what we're doing, hopefully do it in a way that communicates the sort of values that we have, and not just, hey, we had a new course. So that's one part of it. The second part is more, as you said, there's a supply and demand, right?
Mm.
I think the education system needs to, let's focus on Denmark, because if we go global, then this is a whole different conversation. Mm. But obviously, we need to churn out many, many more software engineers.
Mm.
We have to churn out far more women software engineers, in all honesty. It's no good that we still have this 30-70 split when you look at the intakes. That's one of the major education institutions. That has to be a priority.
Mm.
Because right now, it's basically a zero-sum game, right?
Mm.
If we don't make the cake bigger, then this will just be a war that will degenerate into how much money can we pay. And that's, in all honesty, even though we would all like more money, then that's not necessarily the solution to everything. So we need to make the cake bigger.
Mm.
And that starts at, I was about to say it starts in preschool, but it really does.
Mm.
It is getting people interested in software science, software technology. And then, yeah, shepherding them through the system and make sure they don't fall by the wayside after, you know, high school, but they actually move on to the right educational institutions. And I have no idea how to do that, but I'm fairly sure that is the solution to it.
Or a big part of it.
It's a big part of it, at least.
Thanks for that perspective. And with that said, I think it's time to sort of wrap up today. Thank you so much for listening to the end out there. We hope that you enjoyed listening to our discussions and the experiences SimCorp has made on their journey toward the cloud and with their digital skills in general. For more information, you can check the description on our website where the links that we have referred to today will be found. In the next episode, we are also going to continue our discussions around cloud skills, but we will look at it more from a technology provider's point of view. So if this is of interest, be sure to subscribe so you'll be notified whenever we have a new episode uploaded. And if you want to have a chance to getting your questions, problem statements, etc. viewed by a professional, make sure you submit it to podcast@readiness.com or use our website readiness.com/podcast. And a huge thank to you, Ken, for hosting us today and being our guest. It's been a real pleasure. And very informative. I think there has been a lot of good, valuable insights around your transformation journey. And also some for you, maybe because you've been part of a technology organization for many years, not very exciting points, but actually for a more traditional organization moving into more digital, I think there's some hugely exciting points and benefits in what you've told today. So a huge thank you for that.
You're very welcome. It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Fon.
Good. So if you want to stick around, follow our digital journey, subscribe to our podcast for future episodes, and then there's nothing else to say, then thanks for listening. We'll speak very soon.